The case for this afternoon's calendar is Desert Palace, Inc. versus Nevada Gaming Commission, case number 61168. You'll note that there are only four of us here rather than seven. All seven will be participating in this case. They will listen to the webcast of the argument and participate fully in the deliberation. They simply had matters that made it impossible for them to be here, and they send their regrets. Are you prepared to proceed, Mr. Ferrario?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please do.
May it please the Court, Mark Ferrario from the law firm of Greenberg Traurig on behalf of the appellant. And with me is Tammy Cowden. In reviewing the briefs in preparation for this argument, a couple of matters.
You want to reserve any time, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. I was going to reserve 3 minutes. I appreciate okay. that. A couple of things jumped out at me. And I think it will help us focus our attention here today on what I think the real issue is, and I think the issue is really quite simple. This case doesn't involve the any evidence standard. There's been a lot of talk about that. It really doesn't. There's really not any dispute as to the facts or what went on in regard to the transactions at issue. What this case involves is the construction of the LET statute, and in particular 368A.020. And I don't have to say this to this court because it's your precedent. When you're looking at tax statutes such as this statute, you have to strictly construe this statute as it applies to the transaction at issue. And that's where I want to turn immediately, because what is the transaction that's at issue? There's a lot of talk in the papers about purchasing tickets, paying a ticketmaster fee, and all of that. But what's at issue here isn't the transaction between a patron and the ticket office at Caesar's Palace. It isn't the transaction between the patron and Ticketmaster if they're buying a ticket at home. What's at issue here is a transaction between Ticketmaster and AEG. And the transaction at issue was articulated by the state in their brief on page 14. And I'll quote, "The evidence presented establishes that AEG was entitled to receive a portion of the service charges, not for providing a service to the customers, but instead as consideration for granting Ticketmaster the exclusive right to sell admission tickets to the Coliseum over the telephone and on the internet." Then again, on page 21 of the brief that the state filed, "The state characterizes the transaction involving taxing its contractual share of the convenience charges, but instead received it as consideration for allowing Ticketmaster to be its exclusive telephone and internet ticket seller." So the transaction that's at issue here, as characterized by the state, is not one for admission to a live entertainment venue. The transaction at issue here is the payment of a, and it's been characterized in the briefs, as a royalty fee by Ticketmaster to AEG, because AEG negotiated that fee with Ticketmaster, and Ticketmaster is paying for the privilege of providing the online or remote ticket access services to patrons who want to frequent the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace. That's the transactions that's at issue. I would invite any one of you and the state to look at 368A.020 and find in that language, which defines admission charge, any phrase, word, or concept that covers the transaction at issue in this case. It does not exist. So
you absolutely take issue with finding 15 to the effect that it was undisputed that all amounts included in the Coliseum assessments constituted admission charges.
Absolutely.
Okay, because there is that finding that that was undisputed, and your brief says that's inaccurate and the state doesn't respond to it.
You are correct, Justice Pickering.
Okay, so you contest that point?
Absolutely, okay. And it was contested below by prior counsel when they filed an objection to the findings that were coming out from the commission. So that...
your argument is definitionally these fall outside of admission charge, even before you get to the exemption for service.
Absolutely. This isn't an exemption case. We would win if it is an exemption case, but quite frankly, it's simply not an exemption case. And that's why in going through this last night and you know, last week and again this morning, and I reread what the state said, and they accurately characterized the transaction that's at issue. And it might help if we go back and look at how this unfolds. And I'm sure you've all bought a ticket off of Ticketmaster at some point. And you know that when you get to the end of the line and you see the price for the ticket, there's an additional charge. It's a service charge. The state concedes that if Ticketmaster would have retained the entirety of that service charge or the convenience charge or the delivery charge, whatever you want to call it, we wouldn't be here. They concede they can't tax what Ticketmaster retains from the consumer. The only way they come up with this argument is when Ticketmaster reaches in its pocket and then pays AEG a royalty fee or a fee for a license because AEG has a valuable commodity to sell. They have something that's worth something on the open market, and that is the ability to sell these tickets. That when AEG negotiates that economic transaction, the state now says, wait a minute. Even though if Ticketmaster would have held on to this money, it would be non-taxable, because you're now benefiting from this AEG, because you've now sold a license so they can operate that concession for your venues, we're going to now come back and recharacterize this as an admission fee. And they come up with what I think is a straw man argument to say that AEG provided nothing to the patron in return for that payment. Again, I think that's just making things up, because the reality is AEG bargained at arm's length, and there is no, let me stress this, there is nothing in the record to indicate that this is a under-the-table transaction or a backdoor transaction to avoid tax, nothing like that. This isn't a case that involves any sort of mischief, as the state wants to argue. This is a long-standing business practice that was employed by AEG and Ticketmaster long before the LET statute was employed by the state to attach to that transaction. And as a matter of fact, the transaction that issue was addressed in the Minnesota case. And we cited that to you. And in the Minnesota case, the Minnesota Tax Court looked at the exact same transaction and concluded, based on language virtually identical to Nevada statute, that Ticketmaster's paying of royalty payments to the vendor in that case would not trigger the admission tax in Minnesota. The state tries to sidestep the reasoning in that case by saying, well, the case wasn't fully reasoned, or wasn't, it wasn't a detailed analysis employed by the tax court. I would submit, just read the case. The Minnesota Tax Court did go through that in great detail.
So when you step back on the standard of review issue, you agree that review is under 463.317.3, correct?
Yes.
And the state is making an any argument, any evidence argument, deference to the point of almost being abject is their view of that. What's your argument, though, for a different standard of review? You need, what section do you rely on, and what standard of review do you contend we should apply?
It's, I believe, Section 4. It's the last section in that statute. Arbitrary and capricious in a violation of the law. What the commission did here, quite simply, was they exceeded their authority. They took a statute that by its terms does not apply to this transaction, and they contorted it to attempt to levy a tax burden on that untaxable transaction. So they exceeded their authority. And anytime we're dealing with a legal issue such as this, where the applicability of the statute itself, interpretation of the statute at issue, that's a de novo review from this court. And that's why I said at the beginning, this isn't the any evidence situation.
Does the agency's interpretation of the laws it's charged with administering deserve any deference from this court?
There are cases that indicate that, but in this situation where the interpretation being proffered is not supported in any way by the evidence, not by the language of the statute, but is dependent upon implication, I think the answer to that is no. Here we have a statute that defines what an admission charge is. Here we have a concession by the state as to the transaction at issue. When you look at the statute and you look at the transaction simply doesn't fall within the ambit of the statute.
So are you also arguing that the decision is in excess of the commission's statutory authority under B, or are you entirely under E?
No, you're correct. It's, you can do it under B or you can do it under E. Ms. Cowden and I debated that last night, and she persuaded me to go under E. I think it's a B or an E situation, because I think any way you look at it, they inappropriately applied the statute, could be argued as in excess of their authority. And then I think they interpreted it incorrectly to even apply to this situation. And they recast the payment that I talked about, the royalty payment, the license payment, they recast that as somehow an admission charge. And just chanting those words doesn't turn that economic transaction for a license fee or a royalty into an admission charge. And that's essentially what they did. It, with all due respect to the commission, and I've been there a number of times and I respect that body, it was a result-oriented opinion, starting from the false premise that there were concessions that the record demonstrates weren't made. So when you step back, and I understand the state wants to put this into an exemption category, it's not an exemption case, but even if it were an exemption case, we would win there as well. Because when you look at this from the perspective of the patron, which is critical here, the patron pays the service charge. It's clearly articulated to the patron. When the patron interacts with Ticketmaster, you get to the end of that transaction, the patron has the choice to pay that service charge. The patron, if they want to do their business with Ticketmaster, pays the service charge. There's no dispute that what's at issue here is a service charge that would fall within the scope of the exemption if that were even in play, and we more than met our burden of that in the lower court. And I guess when you step, again, back from a lot of what's in the briefs and look at the reality of the transaction from the perspective of the patron can elect to forego the service charge and go to Caesars and buy that ticket at face value and avoid that. What the state is doing here, and I'll cut off, is they are, in effect, now imposing two price structures on that ticket. They're doing violence to the entire setup with an artificial construct of the transaction that I articulated to you and that they articulated in their brief. Thank you.
Good afternoon. If it pleases the court, Ed McGaugh, the Nevada Attorney General's Office. I'm here today on behalf of the Nevada Gaming Commission. The Nevada Gaming Commission today is asking this court to affirm the decision of the district court in its entirety, because the fees at issue here that the live entertainment tax assessment was made on are, in fact, taxable admission charges, and they are not service charges within the meaning intended by the legislature, and therefore not exempt from the tax under the service charge exemption. If we look at the overall view of the live entertainment tax, this was a gross receipts tax on receipts paid by a customer to obtain admissions. The legislature intended to tax as much as possible under this tax. It did not allow for the deductions of expenses, but rather created certain limited exemptions, one of which is the service charge exemption, which we're talking about today. We look at the definition of admission charge. We see that the legislature took a broad approach. It said the total amount of consideration paid for the right or privilege to have access to a facility where live entertainment is provided. The legislature went on in the definition to state that the term includes, without limitation, an entertainment fee, a cover charge, a table reservation fee, or a required minimum purchase of food, refreshments, or merchandise. It's clear the legislature didn't want to limit it just to the face value of an admission ticket. They understood that people would try to avoid this tax by simply labeling what the customer was paying as something other than what an admission charge, or structuring it into a transaction to hide the fact that it was actually what was being expended to purchase the admission. This is a substance over form approach, which has been codified in the definition of admission charge. And that is exactly the test this court must apply under the Lloyd Bank case, is to determine whether something is subject to tax. You look at the underlying transaction and to determine whether the substance of that transaction makes it taxable. You don't look to the form of that transaction. In this case, we have it where the customer wanted to buy a ticket through Ticketmaster had to pay a convenience charge. And of that convenience charge, 60% went to Ticketmaster. 40%, though, went to the operation, went down to AEG Live, the operator, as revenue from the sale of that admission. That's money in their pocket. The state does not contest that the amount retained by Ticketmaster was consideration retained by Ticketmaster for the services Ticketmaster paid to the customer. The customer could not get out of paying the 40%, and the only thing they got in exchange for the 40% was the admission ticket. So looking at
would your argument be the same if the business transaction between AEG and Ticketmaster were prospective? Say AEG says to Ticketmaster, you can be our exclusive agent, but you must pay us on January 1 of every year $1 million.
If it was a flat fee like that, it wouldn't be subject to tax. But according to the 10K report from Ticketmaster, these convenience charges are highly negotiated with the operator, and it is the operator's share of the per-ticket convenience charge. It says that in the 10K report. This is an allocation of a portion of what the customer is paying as a convenience charge that is going to the venue operator. That makes it different because it's directly connected to saying, Ticketmaster saying to them, you let us be the exclusive ticket seller. We're going to let you have a portion of this fee that we're imposing on the customer.
Why is that different from the hypothetical I just offered? It's money. It is just a different negotiating end result.
Because it's not connected directly to something the customer is paying. Meaning, it is actually the how this is structured is that Ticketmaster or the AEG Live is being provided a share of what the customer is paying as this convenience charge. It's their share of the convenience charge. Meaning, when the customer pays it, it's not being going to Ticketmaster for the services, it's being remitted down to the operation. It's additional revenue from that transaction on the sale of the tickets. That's why it's
But it would be the same on the million.
The million, it's not structured that way. And
but it's a share. I mean, it's a negotiated business arrangement.
Well, if the flat fee payment was you give us this share of the percentage of what the customer is paying in this convenience charge, yes, it would be subject to the live entertainment tax. But if it's just a flat fee, I would have to...
You would concede that that would not be subject to the tax?
Because it's completely structured differently. Here, their consideration for giving them the exclusive right is entitling them to the share of that convenience charge, which the customer has to pay to obtain the ticket. And that it brings us back to the definition of admission charge, which is the total consideration paid for the right or privilege to have access to the facility. They cannot access the facility without an admission ticket. They can't buy that admission ticket from Ticketmaster without paying the convenience fee, including the 40% that's going back to AEG Live as revenue. And clearly the legislature wanted to tax all monies paid by a customer to obtain a ticket, and that's the admission charge. And it kept the definition very broad on purpose for this exact scenario.
Can I ask you a question on this one? Mr. Ferraro argued that our standard of review, this should be de novo because it's a legal question here. We certainly know the standard in 46317 subsection 3. What's your take on it? How should we be analyzing it based upon the standard of review and coming to a decision here?
I believe that there are two legal issues before this court, and I agree, it is statutory interpretation. And I believe it is de novo review by this court.
Okay.
And I would agree with him on that, if that's okay. What he said.
And under which subparagraph of 317.3 do you believe his question is being reviewed?
I think that 317, because it's found under case law, because the jurisdiction over interpreting statutes meaning is within this court, not the legislature. So I do not believe 317 is really relevant to your decision as to the interpretation of what the statute means. As far as factual findings by the commission, you know, it's the any evidence standard. And I believe that the commission, as far as the factual record here, meets that burden on that. But as counsel said, it's not really disputed what the facts are in this case.
So you go for de novo review?
Yes.
And you're not arguing any deferences to the Gaming Commission?
No, I wouldn't be for a legal basis. I believe that it's purely in your jurisdiction to
do. Does the Frank Rosenthal case have any play in this case, in your opinion?
That case, again, was a factual finding, and that in that case, the legislature, or it was basically within the jurisdiction of the commission to make that judgment whether or not to license Rosenthal, and that was fully within their jurisdiction. Here we're talking about interpretation of what an admission charge is, what a service charge is, and that would be within your purview to decide. And again, the legislature is very broad. Now, council mentioned that they could go to the box office and get the ticket without paying the Ticketmaster fee, but there were other fees being imposed at the box office. I mentioned them in my brief. There was a box office fee and a house seat fee. Now,
a what fee?
A house seat fee.
Okay.
And the lower court, the commission, the lower court determined that those were in fact admission charges, not exempt service charges, as Caesars tried to characterize them as. The court basically held that only because these fees that were tagged on in the box office were designed to cover overhead costs and credit card, debit card fees. The court basically and the commission held that only the amounts actually being charged by the credit card and debit card companies were the service charges. The rest were revenues and therefore subject to tax. And Caesars isn't disputing that finding in this court, before this court. So they're conceding that those fees there. So, but to say that they avoided a fee by going to the box office is inaccurate. Now, taking the substance over form, the question turns on whether it's a service fee. Well, we know from the history of that it came about because of the Desert Palace case. And in that case, customers bought their tickets or their admission through a ticket broker. The ticket broker took the money from the customer and then retained a portion of that and remitted the rest back down to the venue, to the resort. The court held because they're retaining it, it's for the services that the ticket broker is providing and not for the benefit of the resort, meaning not revenue for the resort, and therefore not subject to tax. It's a service. However, all the monies that flowed down to the venue was subject to the the casino entertainment tax. So in that case, you know, it's basically the revenues that the resort was receiving that were subject to tax. And if you look in 1999, the legislature expanded the service charge exemption to include debit and credit card fees. These were fees retained by the credit card companies, debit card companies, to facilitate the sale. Again, these were monies paid by the customer that were not flowing down to the operation as revenue. So the commission's interpretation, where they, in their order, they do the flowback analysis, that's dead on consistent with the Desert Palace case and consistent with the enactment of the service charge are the debit and credit card fees. So it's clear that the commission's interpretation is consistent with prior record in this area. And when this court is looking at statutory interpretation, they must adopt the reasonable interpretation where two are available. You look in to see if which interpretation is consistent with the overall scheme of the legislation, and which is in the spirit of how the legislature intended. You want to adopt the interpretation that does not result in an absurd result or one that leads to mischief or potential mischief. In this case, like I mentioned, the commission's interpretation has built-in controls. These are outside expenses, which is consistent with the Desert Palace cases. These are fees being paid by the customer that aren't going back to the show as revenue. And these convenience charges, the portion that's going to AEG Live, is going back there as revenue. So the commission's interpretation is consistent with the Desert Palace case, with the debit and credit card exemptions. And then we get to, you know, it also has built-in controls to avoid mischief. With the Caesars interpretation, because the convenience charge and the royalty payment are highly negotiated between Ticketmaster and the operator, There's nothing to stop the operator from putting as much of what the customer is paying into this convenience charge, knowing they're going to get it back through a loyalty payment, and thus cleanse it and not have to pay tax on. And that's an absurd result, because it's the same thing happening. The customer has to pay it. They're getting no service for it. The only thing they're getting is the ticket, and yet AEG is receiving the revenue, which is the operator. And therefore, the taxpayer, which in the case of Caesars, should have to pay tax on the amounts that the operator is receiving from the customer. And to allow them that, now theoretically, they could then reduce the ticket down to a dollar if they wanted to, and the rest of it be the convenience charge, and that would basically erode the tax base down to practically nothing. And to say the legislature intended that when they enacted the service charge exemption would be ridiculous. But more realistically, it's probably not going to be that scenario. But even if it's $5 or $10, that's $5 or $10 that the legislature intended to tax that is now simply being avoided. They're evading the tax simply by the way they structure the transaction. But in form, or in substance, it's revenue to the operator, and that's what the legislature intended. It's paid by the customer to obtain the rider as part of the total consideration paid for the rider privilege to access the venue to view the live entertainment, and it's coming back to the operation as a benefit to that operation, and therefore should be subject to the live entertainment tax. And with that, I conclude my presentation.
I just have one follow-up, and maybe some of my colleagues do as well. On the paragraph 15 of the Commission's findings, I asked your opposing counsel whether that was a bit of an overstatement by the Commission when it was stated it was undisputed that these constituted admission fees. Do you agree with that?
I do not agree. The Commission had a basis for that.
Right.
It was not disputed the customer had to pay the fee to obtain the ticket. So reasonably that could be construed. And since they didn't dispute that the customer had to pay it, therefore, it could be reasoned that it was an admission charge or conceded that it was admission, wasn't in dispute. However, if you've got to look at the bigger picture, the court or the commission then turned the analysis over to whether it was a service charge exempt from the tax. So they still looked at the main issue. So whether or not there's a disagreement as to whether or not they actually there was a concession or whether they agreed that that was a service.
Let me go at this another way. You're not arguing on appeal that that finding of being undisputed is determinative in any way of this appeal. Is that
no,
fair?
No, I believe because, again, we fall back to the de novo review.
Yes, okay.
And I don't believe that, if anything, it was harmless error. I think that this court is prepared or has jurisdiction.
Thank you. I apologize for a bad question.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Ferrario, you have 2 minutes and 38 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very brief. First, I would like to go to the question that you posed. And Mr. McGaugh's answer really kind of ends this debate, because what he said was if it was a flat fee, then the transaction at issue here wouldn't come under the scope of the LET. He says because of how it's calculated, that somehow transforms it into an LET event. Against the backdrop of this court's cases saying you strictly construe tax statutes, you look at the language of NRS 368A, I, again, find nothing in there that says you determine how whether an event, a transaction is taxable is dependent on how you calculate the payment.
I think his point is that he's not looking at it as a taxable event, but rather as a gross revenue tax, and he sees the revenue going back in. And I may not be doing his argument justice, but could you address that point?
Well, yes. That $1 million or the 40%, it comes from the same pot. It comes from the service charges that are charged by Ticketmaster. That's indisputable. So you have this pot of money. Whether you pay it out on a percentage basis or a flat fee, and I think, you know, Justice Pickering, you practice law for a fair amount of time, and you know how you can calculate these. You could do it on a look back and estimate what you're going to get next year and come up with a flat fee. That is not what's determinative here. The language of the statute is what's determinative here. And when you look at the transaction at issue, this payment of a royalty fee, as they characterize it, from Ticketmaster to AEG for the purpose of providing this service to the customers, that simply doesn't fall within the scope of the statute. And that dialogue with him on that $1 million really demonstrated that, I think, conclusively, and makes this a fairly easy case to decide. I would simply call your attention to the one court that really did address this, and that is the Minnesota Tax Court. And I'll just quote from there. The face value of the ticket is itemized separately from the convenience charge and processing fee on statements Ticketmaster transmits to ticket buyers. The plain language of the 3% tax there, which is virtually identical to ours, therefore does not encompass either the convenience charge or the processing fee because they do not constitute consideration paid for the privilege of admission. And that's what we have here. The payment at issue is not for admission. So under your precedent, under the language of the statute, this was an overreach by the commission, and the decision should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to thank both counsel and the parties for the excellent briefs and oral argument. This matter will stand submitted and will be